My name is Lisa Daniello Chase. I am a math specialist. This will be my 9th year as a math specialist in the North Colony School District.
Welcome to Hudson Mohawk Magazine. Math tends to be a bit of a polarizing topic, with some loving it, others claiming to loathe it. Is this fair to math, and what's your relationship with math?
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting because you don't hear the same degree, I think, of strong feelings either way with the other subject areas. I mean, maybe as kids get a little bit older, they might be like, oh, I hate history. But yeah, math, even in elementary school, we get that, oh, math is so hard. I'm so bad at math. And once kids start to go down that path, it's really hard to turn their mindset a bit to start seeing, hey, you know, like this can be challenging, but that can be fun. And as a math specialist, I'm typically working with kids who struggle more and it maybe doesn't come as naturally to them, or they just didn't have that background where parents were integrating math into everyday conversations right from the get-go. So they have a lot of catching up to do when they get to kindergarten and, you know, have yet to count to 10 even, and that happens in some cases.
What are some of the ways that you approach teaching math to people who are having a little bit more difficulty?
Well, I've been really fortunate in my district. They have paid a lot for the math specialist to be trained in math recovery, which is not a curriculum. It describes itself as kind of like a lens about thinking towards mathematical learning. And, you know, I have 2 young children, ages 2 and 4. And so I've applied a lot of the principles into just everyday life with them. And it's amazing what they can do. So math recovery kind of breaks mathematics early numeracy into 3 main areas. One is sequencing and numeral identification. So this is just kind of the memorization part of learning to count, knowing that counting sequence both forwards and backwards, starting with, you know, 1 to 5 and then 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 and building to 10, 20 and beyond, as well as knowing and learning the numerals. And, you know, if you see a 1, that's 1. And if you see a 1 with a 0 right after it, that's now 110, which so 10. You know, there's not a lot of number sense with that specific component. That's just learning it. But then another area in which math recovery focuses on is structuring numbers, which is really how we see numbers. And it starts with our youngest learners using, you know, fingers and, hey, can you show me 3 fingers? And so having my 2-year-old, he can put 3 fingers up on 1 hand, but hey, there's another way to show 3 fingers. You can do 1 finger on 1 hand and 2 fingers on another hand. And having that flexible way of thinking, it's not all the same. And building from there, so 6, ooh, that can be 3 and 3, but it can also be based on that 5 and 1 more. And seeing numbers in that way, that lays the foundation for being able to perform mathematical tasks in our head, having more sophisticated mental capacity down the road. And then the third component is addition and subtraction. And we kind of look at the different stages in there. We start kids learning how to count, because basically the earliest stage of addition and subtraction is just pure counting. They need to see or touch or hear the items. Like if you say what's 5 and 1 more, they have to have 5 counters and another 1 to then count and go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. From there, we build on to, well, gee, can you do 10 and 2 more? And they're still kind of thinking, all right, I got to count those first 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. But maybe I can use my fingers for that. And then I can do 2 more fingers. So that's 11, 12. So they're still counting from 1. And they're still using things to help them, but they can go beyond, start to represent, reusing things. So it's a little bit more abstract. Then from there, we build to counting on, which, you know, if I ask for 10 and 2 more, oh, we don't have to count those first 10 and 2 more. So 10, 11, 12. And then the final stage beyond that is abstract, more advanced strategies, which, you know, if I said 13 plus three, these kids are able to say, well, gee, 3 and 3 is 6. So 13 and 3 is going to be 16. There's no counting there. It's just using that structuring knowledge to really see the numbers kind of almost instantly. And I have to say, like, a lot of our strugglers who are really behind, like, it is a real stretch to get them to those more advanced mental strategies. But we continue to work on it. Everybody's capable of continuing to build their math repertoire.
Is part of the difference in the learning ability, is it part of the way that we talk to different people saying, you're a creative person, or you are this type of person? So do you think these labels kind of keep people from feeling confident in their ability to do many different things?
I would say for sure. And I think that labeling piece was more common back in the day, you know, when I was a student, 25, 30 years ago, and when my parents were students and beyond, like, I think that was a very strong, common thing to occur. Like, oh, you're a math kid. And, you know, it typically came from parents themselves. Like, I was never good at math. And so, you know, but you know, I'm doing fine. And you're going to do just fine too, even though you're not as good, you know, you're not the smartest kid in math. And that does still happen. I think it happens less, especially in the school setting, because we now know, like, everyone's capable, and that mindset is a huge determinant in what kids can do, that growth mindset, and knowing that it's okay to struggle, it's okay to make mistakes. But if you can think to yourself, like, hey, I'm going to keep trying, and I'm going to work on growing in my understanding and use these challenges as opportunities, I think that can make a huge difference. And so many studies have been done on even just educating kids about growth mindset. And so learning that this is a thing and you can work hard to adjust your mindset and then translate that into your way of looking at things, which seems to be especially important in math, just because, as you said before, it's such a polarizing topic and subject area, but it really makes a difference and can totally change a person's life and how they view numbers and what they're capable of thinking and problem solving and beyond. Like, you know, the possibilities are endless. But that's like one of the key things we say to parents: please do not pass your negative thoughts or anxieties onto your kids. Keep it to yourself. You can say, oh, math was really tough for me. I had to work really hard. And that's okay. But don't say, like, oh, math was tough, I was not a math person, and, you know, I just never got it. But that's okay if you're not a math person either. Like, we want to promote the positive, growth-minded thinking.
What would you like to see schools implement in every math classroom?
From my training and from my observations, you know, I see the best math practices happen when there's hands-on small group activities. And it's a lot of effort on the teacher to set up that kind of classroom culture, and to have different stations set up and to teach kids even as young as 5 years old, like, hey, we're going to shift from this table for 15 minutes to then this table to then the carpet, and you're going to do a different activity at each. And some of them are going to be independent, but having the small group where at least one of those stations is really tuned into what those particular kids need so that they can be taught right at their level of proximal development, where they can kind of be challenged a little bit, but not too much, enough to grow. So to have those small groups, lessons are really specifically targeted. And then to have that just kind of free thinking area, that time to just play with math tools, maybe chat with some partners about how to solve problems and listen to others and what their perspectives are. With proper teaching, it can be done in kindergarten classrooms. And we really help to try to set that up COVID has made things hard. I'm hoping this school year kids can start to sit next to each other again and we can have little learning centers because it makes a huge difference. In an ideal classroom, the teacher should be thought of as a facilitator and the students should be really the explorers who can then share and help to teach others. And I think that's where you're going to find your best results.
Thank you, Lisa, for coming on to Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Oh, thank you. This was a pleasure.